Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for May 24th, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Senate passed a Farm Bill amendment that would require producers making more than $750,000 to pay more for crop insurance. We'll have that in other stories. And we'll get the latest on the weekend weather outlook from Illinois climatologist Jim Angel. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Here are how futures settled ahead of the long three-day weekend in Kansas City. July wheat, 745 and three-quarters, down 8 3/4. December, 769 and a quarter, down 9 1/4. July wheat in Chicago, 697 and a half, down 5 3/4. December, 718, down 5. July corn, 657 and a quarter, down 4 3/4. December, 536 and a half, up 1 3/4. July soybeans, 1476 and a quarter, down 23 1/4. August, 1402 and a half, down 12. September, $13 up a half. And November, at 1247 and 3/4, up 4 3/4. July soybean meal, 428.20, down 8.80. July soybean oil, 49.24, down 42. June live cattle, 120.95, up 182 and a half. August, 119.60, up 140. August feeders, 144.72 and a half, up 207 and a half. September, 146.90, up 195. June lean hogs settled at 94.87 and a half, up 67 and a half. In July, at 93.35, up 32 and a half. And those are your settlements from Chicago and from Kansas City.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says today's U.S. Midwest forecast is wetter for the first several days in June across the lower and eastern Midwest relative to Thursday's forecast. Temperatures are also suggested to be cooler during that period of time. Warm temperatures will be confined to the southern U.S. states this weekend, but a surge northeastward is expected Sunday into midweek next week, with many 80-degree highs likely, with 90s in the southern plains. A few extremes into the lower 90s will be possible in the Delta southeastern states and lowermost Midwest during the peak of the heat next week. Portions of Michigan, Ohio, and northeastern Indiana are trending a little drier and need some rain. Some showers will occur infrequently over the next 2 weeks, but a more generalized rain will still be needed. Restricted rainfall is also expected to continue in the southwestern U.S. plains next week, with isolated to scattered thunderstorms expected. The pattern prevails through the first week of June.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgro on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hello again, Dave.
Wheat market didn't come around today, did it?
No, it didn't. The European market continued on a path of lower going into its close as some end users reportedly went ahead and sold the market going into the end of the week. And we also had what was reported as speculative liquidation as well. So we did not pick up any friendliness from those soft red wheat exports to China, nor, as you just reported on the weather update, pick up any friendliness from really hot and dry conditions in the short term for western Kansas and eastern Colorado. So that was something pretty meaningful to me going into the close, because we did go back below $7 in July wheat and $7.50 in July Kansas City wheat. We don't want to spend too many days below those levels, I don't think.
Do we think that there were traders in Chicago to make that happen, or was it electronic in primary?
I think most of it was electronic. I think if I took a step back for the week as a whole, I think it was still a very good week, and I think in a bigger picture, this is one of those weeks where, yes, July corn didn't close up a lot, but it still closed up. Dees, corn, November beans, July wheat all closed up, and what was even more important to me was if we close where we're at in the S&P 500 today, this will be the first lower close on the week in about 6 weeks, and we're also working on a lower weekly close in the June dollar index or lead month dollar index futures. I think this is an interesting thing going into the end of this week, because this could be the beginning of a trend, because it is one of those first times we've seen in a long time, Dave. So I think this is something to watch very closely, along with that planting weather and what may be replanting weather based upon how much rain Iowa and western Illinois gets. The midday models did shift the rain a little bit west, so that Bloomington was more on the edge. Champaign was kind of out of the bullseye, but Peoria, Des Moines, that seems to still look like about 4 inches of rain between now and the mid to later part of next week.
So what case do you want to make then going forward, potentially trend-wise, for this lower S&P, lower U.S. dollar, and slightly higher weekly closes on the grains?
With the Dow Jones UBS Grain Index going up 1.3% on the week and holding above a key breakout point, and also with Bernanke's testimony, in my view, being more inflationary, and probably the first inflationary talk we've heard from him in quite some time, the Japanese GDP beating estimates, and also even the Chinese data. It was poor economic data, but you know what usually happens when they have poor economic data? That's when the government usually stokes the stimulus fire to try and recharge their economy. So I'm going to say that this is our best shot in quite a while to continue the trend higher of weaker dollar, weaker S&P, and that brings the commodities back around and the funds continue to buy into them.
So next week, then, what would you look for?
Need a higher close. There's just no way around that, because then you're out of the tall weeds and you have more momentum behind you. I mean, especially higher closes in the August beans and September corn. Not really as nervous about the July futures when it comes to the corn and beans. A close above 7.25 in July wheat would really tickle me. A close back up above the 14.25 level in August beans would really be nice. And then a close back up above 570, 575 area in September corn, I think would really turn some eyes and create an environment where the short side of the market would be very nervous.
Any chance that soybean meal can regain its short-term leadership role?
I do think that, because I checked with some producers over in eastern Indiana, and Decatur meal at Bunge was reportedly up at 84 over the August future, so that puts it at $495 a ton, roughly, and then you've got Raleigh, North Carolina, still running about $80 over the July futures. I don't see any let-up in the cash market for the meal, so I do think that August meal goes up towards where the July is at right now, as opposed to the July collapsing to the August.
What are your undervalue and overvalue points for harvest months?
Well, 5.11, 5.10, 5.11 was the undervalue level for the corn, and that remains the case all the way through June 30th. If we look at new crop beans, you're talking about going all the way down just under $11 based upon planted acres, normal yield, and big South American production, and still very, very good demand. But you're looking at 250 to 300 million bushel carryover, and acres are going up, not down, in beans. Unfortunately, the November beans have quite a bit more medium-term downside than the corn does. overvalue for the corn would still be just under $6 for December futures. Overvalue for the November beans would be up around that $12.75 to $13 area.
Turning your attention to livestock, let's have a word or two there, please.
Yeah, you had a nice week in the livestock, and it was a surprisingly good week given that we had a weaker equity market. But I think the dollar turning lower really built up the export bias again, and the funds came in again on the idea that we're going to be seeing better exports. I think also you've got some disease pressure starting to brew in the hog market and in the domestic hog herd. You're still lacking exports when it comes to pork, and I wonder if the market's really going to deal with that very well if it keeps up. Lastly, I would say this holiday weekend is going to be extremely important to the packers and when they come back next week, whether they bid up or bid down.
Live cattle has been beat up in a major way, 119.15 the low this week on the June contract. Do you see any hope for it to come around in the second quarter?
I do, especially led by the feeders. I put out a note early this week and recommended buying 100% of your needs all the way through fall for the feeder cattle, just on the idea that now that the May is off the board, the corn market can go up, the feeders can go up with the corn at this stage, because we are running tighter and tighter supplies, and we do have record prices on the cutout. So I do think the feeder cattle can support the live cattle for the next 6 or 7 months, Dave.
What else are you keeping an eye on that we should know about?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the short-term weather. I mean, this is where it goes back to too much rain is going to be bullish, because you're in a replant situation and you're not going to get enough beans planted next week, and you're going to be running into the 1st of June. Just the amount of rain that you need, like an inch, inch and a half over the course of the next 6 days, will probably turn the market into an idea of rain makes grain and the crops getting bigger. That's where we're going to have to weave in between with these outside markets and these charts and this inflation-deflation talk we've been having here.
We can expect that the market will overreact, probably.
Yeah, and especially if they're in a deflationary mindset, they'll easily overreact to the downside. That's been the trend the last 9 months. That's a great point.
Anything else, sir?
I think the last thing I would say is that when you look at the soybeans, remember that if we only come in at about 60% planted, don't be too excited to get new crop beans hedged until you hit those overvalue targets, because you're still talking about 30, 31 million acres of beans that still need to be planted. So it's going to be a juggle here. If we start to pick up on Brazilian exports, we're going to have to weigh that against how slow or how fast the beans are getting planted, because southern Delta state planters have already stopped rolling and are already talking about delays in bean planting at this point.
Thank you much, Mike.
Have a great holiday, sir.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, and he is in Lafayette, Indiana. He joins us every Friday afternoon on the Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In agricultural news, larger farmers would have to pay higher crop insurance premiums under an amendment added yesterday to the Senate version of the Farm Bill. Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois, and Senator Tom Colburn, a Republican from Oklahoma, got senators to back a plan that would lower the premium subsidy for farmers making more than $750,000 adjusted gross income. Farmers making more than that benchmark would see their premium subsidy lowered from 62% to 47%. Senators spent most of Thursday afternoon debating crop insurance amendments before shutting down debate on the Farm Bill until they returned from a break on June the 3rd. Canadian officials say that proposed changes to U.S. meat labeling laws are unsatisfactory and continue to discriminate against Canadian beef and hog producers. Canadian meat producers reacted angrily yesterday after the U.S. revealed long-anticipated changes to its labeling guidelines that are meant to put it in compliance with a ruling from the World Trade Organization. Canada Ag Minister Jerry Ritz says that the new rules do not meet the WTO requirements and will actually intensify discrimination against Canadian cattle and hog producers. He says, quote, Canada will consider all options at its disposal, including, if necessary, the use of retaliatory measures. China today announced a lengthy list of overhauls that it wants to push ahead with this year, ranging from faster urbanization to controversial property taxes, as its new leaders try to speed structural reforms amid slowing economic growth. The government will expand the scope of a shift toward using the value-added tax, replacing a heavier business tax, as a means of helping companies already struggling with slower economic growth. On the financial reform front, the government will steadily push forward with interest rate liberalization by gradually loosening control on deposit and lending rates while moving ahead with a deposit insurance system. The Federal Reserve Bank president of St. Louis says that economic growth in the U.S. could reach 3% this year, although the economy's growth potential has likely been hurt by the financial crisis that plunged the world into recession in 2008. James Bullard said the Fed should not consider slowing the pace of its monthly asset purchases until inflation picks up. Annual inflation slowed to 1.1% in April, below the Fed's 2% target rate. Global crop protection companies BASF-SE and Monsanto Company plan to commercially launch a drought-tolerant variety of genetically modified corn in the U.S., next year. The two companies have a revenue sharing agreement with 60% of revenue going to Monsanto and the rest to BASF. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. USDA has opted to conduct full environmental impact statements as opposed to an abbreviated environmental assessment on two new soybean gene technologies. Both are designed to impart herbicide resistance. This enhanced environmental review, as Todd Gleason reports, is a more cautious path for the USDA.
The cautious path comes in the wake of lawsuits surrounding the agency's deregulation of herbicide-resistant alfalfa and sugar beets without full environmental impact studies. It's likely to delay new and future product introductions into the marketplace, says University of Illinois agricultural law specialist Brian Endress.
Well, the USDA, specifically the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, has been reviewing a petition to deregulate two new soybean varieties, as well as this technology applies to corn and cotton, that are resistant to the 2,4-D herbicide as well as dicamba herbicide. So in other words, it's an alternative herbicide resistance to the Roundup and Liberty products.
It was expected these reviews would wrap up soon and that both soybean herbicide technologies would enter the marketplace next year. That's no longer the case. Each will be subjected to a full environmental impact statement under the National Environmental Policy Act.
In the past, the USDA has only conducted a more fast-track environmental assessment. And and what that means is that for a full environmental impact statement, or EIS, it's going to require more scientific study, a greater opportunity for the public to comment. And from the soybean industry, it's going to delay the release of these two products by about a year or longer.
Here's the reason Endress believes USDA opted for the full studies.
The last two varieties that the USDA has deregulated, the Roundup Ready Sugar Beet and Roundup Ready Alfalfa, the agency not conduct an environmental impact statement, but rather the shorter environmental assessment. And in both cases, the agency was sued and lost and had to go back to the table to perform a full environmental impact statement.
USDA's decision, then, is not an indication of something amiss with the technologies, but rather an acknowledgement of the changing legal landscape as it relates to genetically modified crops and their approval. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Boy, what's happening with the soybean basis coming back to the futures lately?
It has just been a crazy week in soybeans. I think I changed our bid sheet four or five times during the course of the day yesterday. Every time there was an email, it was another change from a different processor out there.
So why explain it to us so we all know what's going on?
Oh, I think there was a couple things at work. The basic was that, you know, we just saw some tremendously volatile inverses in the July, August, July Nov spreads. So a lot of activity, and it was very choppy and volatile, moving around a lot. The other thing is there were quite a few soybeans, old crop beans, moving over the last week or two. I think your processors were buying some coverage, pushing it out 4 to 6 weeks. Well, that's getting beyond the length of what the July futures are going to be trading. So you don't want to have a whole bunch of, you know, long futures versus July versus product sales, and your product sales going out versus the August or SEP in an inverted market. So I think they were just matching up better on when they were going to be making their sales, too.
So what has happened is, from now forward, everybody's actually basing it off, even though the cash market is still in July, they're actually looking forward to for the August and the SEP.
They're looking for the August or, in some cases, the November. The SIF market is still versus the July. Processors are mostly versus either August or Nov right now.
Turn your attention to the corn market, please.
Corn has actually been fairly quiet. It's been steady. We continue to buy just a little bit of old crop out there. There's been a lot more new crop interest, but then the corn is in the ground, and it is amazing how fast this stuff is germinating and emerging.
So what kind of bids are folk thinking about to start their marketings with you on new crop corn?
I'm not sure that there is a magic number out there. It depends on the individual. As the crop gets in the ground and starts looking decent out here, we're seeing some catch-up sales going on because we had historically very, very little new crop purchases on a low sales rate, so we've been seeing some catch-up out there. And when you look at it, that new crop basis has been pretty strong, so it makes an attractive sales point. Mm-hmm. The biggest downside is that you got a strong inverse, so it doesn't look like it's good a number, and we've come off of 2 or 3 years where forward sales haven't been that good. So when we all pull back and don't sell anything, that's probably the time when we should be.
September corn, is it going to be considered old crop or new crop when it's all said and done?
I think it's going to be old crop this year. And, you know, September is always an oddball month, and we're in a strange situation where we're going to have a tight carryout, but we're not going to have those southern corn acres coming off because they're behind putting the crop in. It's one of these deals where, you know, you're probably further along on your planning at Freeport than you are at Litchfield, so.
What about your prices today then, sir?
We are at $6.93 on nearby corn, $5.23 new crop, $15.23 on nearby beans, and $12.28 on new crop.
Thank you much, Bruce.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. And in 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather with Jim Angel, who is the Illinois state climatologist. It's National Escargot Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1686, Daniel Gabriel Fahrenheit was born. He developed the Fahrenheit temperature scale and invented the mercury thermometer. Fahrenheit discovered, among other things, that water can remain liquid below its freezing point and that the boiling point of liquids varies with atmospheric pressure. In 1844, Samuel Morse transmitted the message, "What hath God wrought?" from the U.S. Supreme Court to the Montclair station of the B&O Railway Company, the first American telegraph line. By the way, the biblical text from Numbers was selected by Annie Ellsworth, teenage daughter of the Commissioner of U.S. Patents. In 1883, the Brooklyn Bridge opened. It took 14 years to build at a cost of $18 million and was the longest suspension bridge in the world at the time. In 1945, the first Food-O-Met was installed in a Grand Union Company store in New Jersey. And in 1964, Alan Hazelton died, an American electrical engineer. He invented the first circuit, which made commercial radio possible. By 1927, some 10 million receivers with his circuit were being used by listeners in the United States. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for our look at the agricultural weather is Jim Angel, who is the Illinois State Climatologist. Good afternoon, Jim.
Good afternoon.
Burr is all I can say. I got up this morning to go to work. I go to work about 5:30, walked out the door, took one step, turned around, walked right back in, and got my coat.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it was pretty cold this morning. In fact, here in Champaign, we got down to 39 degrees, and that's just 1 degree warmer than the record of 38 degrees set back in the 1950s. And did see some scattered reports of frost, especially in the northern part of Illinois. We had a couple of stations get down close to freezing. I think Mundelein and Mount Carroll both got down to 33 degrees. So pretty chilly, especially for this time of year.
Yeah, so tell us this is going to be blowing out of here in a few days because the corn needs not this.
That's right. Yeah, this is not what we need for it to get that corn crop going. It is going to warm up. In fact, starting after tonight, it's going to be another cool night, but starting tomorrow, get back up in the 60s. And, in fact, Saturday, high 65, high Sunday at 67, Monday, Memorial Day, 74. And then next week it gets up into the 80s, which is actually pretty warm for us. That's actually above average for this time of year. So that's the good news, warmer weather, more summer-like weather. The bad news is we've got a chance of rain for the next several days starting tomorrow and all the way through about Monday night, Tuesday, we might have another, that's when the rains are expected to end. So it's about a 30 to 50% chance of rain or thunderstorms during that 3 or 4 days there. So the Memorial Day weekend forecast looks a little too wet for those outside activities, but we'll have to see how that works out.
Well, if you could divide that rain so it only covers the southern third to half of the county, keep the northern half dry because that's where we really need to do a little bit more planning in the northern half of the county. Can you arrange that for us?
Yeah, well, we'll see what we can do.
Before we let you go, let's talk a little bit about how May is may be stacking up against other Mays historically when it's all said and done.
Yeah, if we look at May so far, statewide, it's actually fairly wet. We've got a lot of areas. Statewide average is about 3.8 inches, and that's about an inch or so less than the long-term average. Here in Champaign County, we're actually one of the drier parts of the state. We've only got about 2.2 inches here at the water survey, and some other places probably had a little different than that. But it's a little on the drier side here, which for right now is good news because I was up in the Chicago area yesterday where they got a lot more rain in the last week, and there's a lot of water standing in the fields. So at least we don't have that problem right now. But we'll see how that plays out in the next couple of days.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
That's Jim Angel, who is the Illinois State Climatologist, and that is today's Closing Market Report. You can go to our website right now if you want and click on the Commodity Week link with Commodity Week already up and running. Go to WILLAG.org, click on the Commodity Week link, and that show is there for you right now. This is Dave Dickey.